भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर भवती नैष्टिकी। श्रीमद् भागवतम सेकंड कैंटो नाइन्थ चैप्टर टेक्स्ट सेवन और टेक्स्ट सिक्स। सा चिन्तयन् द्वि अक्षरम् एकदाम्भसि उपाश्रिनौ द्वीर् गदितम् वचो विभुः स्पर्शेषु यत् षोडशम् एकविंशम् निष्किञ्चनानाम् नृप यद् धनम् पीदुः। सचिन्तयन् द्वक्षरम् एकादम्भसि उपाश्रिनद्विर्गदितं वचो विभु स्पर्शेषु यत् षोडशम् एकविंशम् निष्किञ्चनानां नृपजद्धनं विदु सचिन्तयन् दक्षरम् एकदम्भस्य उपाश्रिनद्विर्गदितं वचो विभु स्पर्शेषु यत् षोडशम् एकविंशम् निष्किञ्चनानां नृपजद्धनं विदु सचिन्तयन् द्व्यक्षरम् एकाम्भसि सचिन्तयन् द्व्यक्षरम् एकदम्भसि उपाश्विनद्विर्गदितं वचो विभु स्पर्शेषु यत् षोडशम् एकविंशम् निष्किञ्चनानां नृपजद्धनं विदु स हि चिन्तयन् वैल् दस् थिङ्किङ्ग् द्वि टु अक्षरम् सिलबल्स् एकदा वन्स् अपोन् अ टैम् अम्भसि इन् द वाटर् उपाश्रिनोत् हर्ड् इट् नियर् बै द्वि ट्वैस् गदितम् अटर्ड् वचः वर्ड्स् बिभु
the great. Sparsheshu, in the sparsha letters. Yat, which, Sodasham, the 16th, Eka Vingsham, and the 21st. Nishkinchananam, of the renounced order of life. Nripa, O King, Yat, what is, Dhanam, wealth, Biduhu, as it is known. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. While thus engaged in thinking in the water, Brahmaji heard twice from nearby two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 16th and the other from the 21st of the Sparsha alphabets, and both joined to become the wealth of the renounced order of life. Please repeat after me. While thus engaged in thinking, in the water, Brahmaji heard twice from nearby two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 6th, from the 16th, and the other from the 21st of the Sparsha alphabets. And both joined to become the wealth of the renounced order of life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Sanskrit language, the consonant alphabets are divided into two divisions, namely the Sparsha Varnas and the Talabhya Varnas. From Ka to Ma, the letters are known as Sparsha Varnas, and the 16th of the group is called Ta, whereas the 21st letter is called Pa. So, when they are joined together, the word tapa or penance is constructed. This penance is the beauty and wealth of the brahmanas and the renounced order of life. According to Bhagavad philosophy, even human being is meant simply for this tapa and for no other business. Because by penance only can one realize his self. And self-realization, not sense gratification, is the business of human life. This tapa or penance was began from the very beginning of the creation, and it was first adopted by the Supreme Spiritual Master, Lord Brahma. By tapasya only can one get the profit of human life, and not by a polished civilization of animal life. The animal does not know anything except sense gratification in the jurisdiction of eat, drink, be merry and enjoy. But the human being is made to undergo tapasya for going back to Godhead, back home. When Lord Brahma was perplexed about how to construct the material manifestations in the universe, and went down within the water to find out the means and the source of his lotus seat, he heard the word tapa vibrated twice. Taking the path of tapa is the second birth of the desiring disciple. The word uposhrinat is very significant. It is similar to uponayana, or bringing the disciple nearer to the spiritual master for the path of tapa. So Brahmaji was thus initiated by Lord Krishna, and this fact is corroborated by Brahmaji himself in his book, the Brahma Samhita. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma has sung in every verse, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Thus Brahma was initiated by the Krishna mantra, by Lord Krishna himself, and thus he became a Vaishnava or a devotee of the Lord before he was able to construct the huge universe. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita that Lord Brahma was initiated into the 16th letter, Krishna Mantra, which is generally accepted by all the devotees of the Lord. We follow the same principle because we belong to the Brahma Sampradaya. Directly in the disciplic chain from Brahma to Narad, from Narad to Vyas, from Vyas to Madhva Muni, from Madhva Muni to Madhavendra Puri, from Madhavendra Puri to Isharpuri, from Isharpuri to Lord Chaitanya, and gradually to His Divine Grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, our Divine Master. One who is thus initiated in the disciplic succession is able to achieve the same result of power of creation. Chanting of this holy mantra is the only shelter of the desireless pure devotee of the Lord. Simply by such tapasya or penance, the devotee of the Lord achieves all perfection like Lord Brahma. Sachintoyan da aksharam ekadambhasi upashrinad dvir gaditam bacho vibhu sparshe shujat sodasham ekavimsham nishkinchananam nripajadhanam vidu. While thus engaged in thinking in the water, Lord Brahma heard twice from nearby two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 16th and the other from the 21st of the Sparsha alphabets, and both joined to become the wealth of the renounced order of life. So, Sukadeva Goswami is explaining to Parikshit Maharaj about how Brahma received the transcendental knowledge. He is describing that because he is about to tell Sukadeva Goswami, or he is about to impart this transcendental knowledge to Srila Sukadeva Goswami, to Srila Parikshit Maharaj. So he is giving the background where from this knowledge that he is going to impart came from. The knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, how did it come? And here is the description that he is giving. The first created Brahma found himself seated on a lotus seat, and there was nothing around. Brahma just found himself sitting on that lotus. Although Brahma was just born, but Brahma was not like a baby who doesn't have any consciousness or developed consciousness. He was fully conscious. Brahma's situation is something like if we one morning, if we wake up and we find ourselves in a strange place, how will we feel? Doesn't it happen sometimes? We wake up, and especially when you go to a new place, and we wake up and we can't really recognize where we actually are. It happens to me often. When I go to a new place, after a long flight, I wake up in the middle of the night, and then it takes me a few seconds actually to figure out where I am. So Brahma also, he just woke up. He was fully conscious, fully developed consciousness. And he just found himself sitting on a lotus. And that lotus was in the middle of an ocean. And there was nothing. There was nothing. Just he, himself, sitting on a lotus in the middle of the Garbha ocean. How will you feel when you wake up like that one morning? You find yourself just sitting on in your bed, and there's nothing there. Nobody, nothing, no building, nothing. No trees, no plants. Just you are there in the middle of a lake. Not only a lake, at least the lake also has its limited surrounding, but there was nothing, only just water and
that lotus. So Brahma just kept on climbing down. He thought if he could reach the bottom of the water, he'll be able to find out. And it has been described that Brahma came very close to the navel of the Lord, from where that lotus actually originated. But Brahma couldn't see that the Lord or his navel. Why Brahma couldn't see? Who knows? Raise your hands, those who know. Why Brahma couldn't see? Universe was dark completely.
He was completely ignorant about the spiritually ignorant. There was no spiritual consciousness at that time.
Very good. Very good. You want to add?
Because he was trying with his own endeavor.
Okay. Yeah, but the main point actually is what Jayesh mentioned. With our material consciousness, with our material senses, we can't perceive the spiritual reality. Brahma was limited, like everyone else. Although he's a very advanced personality, he's directly the son of the Lord. He is actually, in a way, he is Garbhodakshay Vishnu's son. Directly from his navel he came out. So although he is such an advanced personality, still his senses were material. And with our material senses we cannot perceive the spiritual sky, the spiritual reality. To perceive the spiritual reality we have to develop our spiritual senses. To perceive the spiritual reality, we have to purify our senses. Our senses are actually purified, pure. Originally our senses are pure, but because it has been covered or contaminated by matter, it has become material. It perceives only matter. So it's a question, it's a consideration of purifying our senses. So when Brahma, in this way, was endeavoring to understand what was his origin, that is, why he wanted to know who he was, where he came from, and what he was supposed to do, then Brahma heard this sound. This sound comprised of the 16th syllable of Sparshavarna, and the 21st syllable of Sparshavarna. So, how many Sparshavarnas are there? 20. Very good. Ganganarayan Panditji. Very good. 25 Sparshavarnas. They fall in the category. There are five. Five Bargas, yeah. And what are those Bargas? Very good. Ka, cha, ta, ta, pa. Ka Barga has which one? Which letter? Okay. Cha Barga? Okay. Then, ka, cha, ta, Barga? And so, 3 fives are 15. So what is the 16th letter then?
Ta.
And Ta Varga is? Ta Tha Dadha Dantanya. And then, that is, 4 multiplied by 5 is 20. So what is the 21st one?
Pa.
So Ta Pa. He heard this word twice. Ta Pa. Tapa. Tapa means, okay, Brahma, perform austerity. So that is how it dawned in Brahma's heart. The sound, tapa, conveyed the inspiration to perform austerity. And it has been described here that austerity is the
wealth of the renounced, wealth of the renounced order of life. Now, then again, what is austerity? What is austerity? Who knows what is austerity? Yes, Krishna Chan.
To voluntarily accept a painful condition for spiritual progress.
Voluntarily accept painful condition for spiritual progress.
Difficulties.
Okay, that's better. Voluntarily accept difficulties for spiritual advancement. Not painful condition. Our business is not to become painful. Our business is to become free from painful condition. But in order to get rid of the painful condition, we have to get rid of our bad habits. So the endeavor to get rid of the bad habit is actually austerity. And what are the bad habits? The actually bad habits are of four types: meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. So Prabhupada pointed out that for the age of Kali, austerity is to just follow the four regulative principles. It's difficult, isn't it? Those who are addicted to eating fish, it was difficult to get rid of the fish, to stop eating fish or meat. Meat, fish, eggs. So to give up, to give that up. Why should you give that up? For spiritual advancement. In order to make spiritual advancement, we have to get rid of these bad habits. Give up meat eating, give up intoxication. Those who are addicted to intoxication, it's very difficult to get rid of them. Like what to speak of heavy intoxications, like heroin and cocaine and even simple intoxications like gutkha. People find it difficult to give up this gutkha or pan or tamaku, chai. But when one becomes serious about spiritual life, one gives up those bad habits. Actually, practically everybody in this age has these bad habits, at least some of these bad habits. Like nowadays, people, tea, like the first thing they need in the morning is a cup of tea. They become habituated to that. Bed tea. To wake you up, a bed tea is brought. So you wake up and drink the tea to wake yourself up. And those who are from South India, for them it's coffee. In North India it's tea, and South India it's coffee. Isn't it?
Yes. What I find that the chanting is so powerful. All these intoxications are nothing before.
That's true. That's true. Actually, that's a very good point. Like those who have bad habits, they always admit that they tried to give up the habits. Like nowadays, many people smoke cigarettes. It's a very common practice. And people try to give up smoking cigarettes, but they couldn't. But when they come to ISKCON, very easily they can give it up. Lakshminath is shaking his head.
So that is why and how coming in ISKCON we can give up. We could give up these bad habits because of the chanting of the holy name. Chanting of the holy name actually gives us the power and the ability to overcome these bad habits. So these are the impediments in our spiritual progress. So they have, people have to give up. And unless and until one has the shelter of the holy name and the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, they can't give up. So, but for devotees it becomes easy. It becomes so easy that devotees don't even consider it to be austerity. And that's the thing about austerity. When it is properly executed, then it's not difficult. Austerity should not be difficult. Like Prabhupada even mentioned, that now that you are sitting in the class listening to Srimad Bhagavatam, that is austerity. That is an austerity. Because sit down and at one place is difficult. People cannot do that. But do you find it difficult? No, why? Because hopefully the Bhagavatam class is so interesting that you don't feel the difficulty of austerity. See, Sudevi? So you're finding the Bhagavatam class not very interesting. So she is finding it difficult to sit down. Now you have to perform some austerity. Tapasya korbe? Okay. So this is the wealth of the renounced way of life. Perform the austerities. Accept difficulties for spiritual advancement. And the reward is so wonderful. What is the reward? The reward is purification of heart. The reward is achieving eternal life. The reward is acquiring absolute knowledge. And the reward is achieving uninterrupted experience of ecstasy, joy. Why we are undergoing these austerities? We don't have to go to the mountain caves or lie on a bed of nails or surround ourselves with fire in the middle of summer. Like, these are the kind of austerities in ignorance. Brahma is not talking about that austerity. What is the austerity that Brahma is actually indicating here? What is actually austerity? The ultimate consideration of austerity is withdrawing the senses from the objects of the senses. That is what Brahma did. He withdrew his senses, no more allowing the senses to go outside. Projected the senses internally. And when he projected his senses internally, then what happened? And this process of projecting the senses internally is called yoga. Dhyana. Dhyana yoga or dhyan, meditation. Which begins from that point of pratyahar or withdrawal. After pratyahar comes dhyan, then dharan, then samadhi. And at that stage of samadhi, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. dhyanavasthita tadgatena manasa pashyanti jang yogina. Dhyanavasthita, being situated in meditation, tadgatena manasa, when their mind is projected onto that personality, the yogis pashyanti jang yogina, the yogis perceive him, see him in the core of their hearts. And who is that? That is jang shyama sundaram achinta guna swarupam. Shyam sundar, the beautiful form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the reservoir of unlimited qualities, inconceivable qualities, who is a reservoir of inconceivable qualities. So that is how wonderful Krishna is. So when we see him, we cannot help but become attracted to him. That's why he is Krishna. He is so attractive that we'll immediately become attracted to him. It's only a matter of seeing him. Then there is no way we can go away from him. So that is why, in one hand, although it has been pointed out that tapa is the wealth of renounced order of life, but at the same time it is said that this process is executed happily. It sounds contradictory. In one hand there is a direction that accept austerity, but then at the same time it has been pointing out that it is happily executed. Susukham kartum appayam. Susukham, very happily executed. What does it mean? In spiritual life, austerity is happily executed. What is austerity to others, to a devotee, it's the way of life. Like people will think, oh, getting up at 3:30 in the morning is so austere. Often I used to think also, like, I could never think of getting up at 5 o'clock, what to speak of 3:30 or 2:30. And nowadays sometimes I wake up at 2:30, 3 o'clock. Latest 3:30. But I remember I used to have an aunt, my father's elder sister. She was very pious. And she used to get up every day at 5 o'clock and she used to take her bath and then she used to worship the deity. She had a temple at home. And I used to think, wow, 5 o'clock, waking up. And then not only waking up at 5 o'clock, taking a bath. But nowadays if I wake up at 5 o'clock, I think, oh, I've overslept. Now that we are waking up at 3:30, is it difficult? Do we find it austerity? Others will think, oh, it is so austere. But to us, it's a way of life. Others may think, oh, look, they don't eat meat, fish and onions and garlics. But for us, it is a way of life. Rather, just to even think of eating meat and fish is so disgusting, so repulsive. Even if we get some smell, like the other day in Jagannath Puri, somebody made arrangement for me in a very fancy hotel, the best hotel in Jagannath Puri, and got the best suite for me. I couldn't sleep the whole night because the kitchen was just below. And there was so much smell of onion and garlic that came into the room. In the evening, that that smell was there in the room, and I couldn't, not only I couldn't sleep, I got such a terrible headache. So next morning, the first thing I did, it just, I told them that I'm moving out. And I moved out to the Birla guest house. Simple. But at least I knew that there won't be any onion and garlic smell. So this is how sensitive we become. I mean, we can't even think of those things. I mean, just a little smell of... Like when I take flight, one of the austerities when they serve. And they serve all kinds of non-vegetarian food, and you get the smell. And what to speak of seeing a person sitting next to you is eating that. Stuffs. So this becomes our way of life. It's not an austerity. To other people may think, other people it may appear that, oh, it's so austere for these Hare Krishnas. They get up so early in the morning, they're vegetarians and they're... But to us it is wonderful. In America, once they were interviewing people about their background and their way of life. So they were interviewing one devotee. So they asked whether he has a house to live. He doesn't have a house to live. Whether he has a bank account, he doesn't have a bank account. Whether he was married, no. Whether he has a girlfriend, no. So all the questions was no, no, and no. So the lady who was interviewing became so exasperated, she just screamed finally and said, "Then why are you so happy?" They think that not to have these things is a source of misery. But the devotees don't have any of these things and they're the happiest people. Why? Because they have got their spiritual life. They have got their connection with Krishna. Like one thing I notice, that just the devotees' faces, they're so blissful. People say that the devotees don't age. They look the same. Sometimes people tell me, my god brothers, that I look the same. The way I looked before. Of course, my answer is, that's because I always looked old. And that is because they are free, they lead a life that is free from anxiety. And that's why they're so blissful. They don't have any worry. They don't have any worry because they know that Krishna is there to take care of them. Another thing, like this time when I was in America, I met some of my god brothers who I didn't see for a long time, and they knew about the project, Ujjain project, and they told me that they thought that I would be in so much anxiety and I'd be so strained, and they were surprised that, you know, I was not. And I told them the secret, because I'm simply depending upon Krishna and he's making all the arrangements. Ultimately, that is the reality. We don't do anything. Krishna does everything. We do a little bit. Regarding that, I gave an example that how we do a little bit we not only a little bit, an insignificant bit, but Krishna gives us the credit. And the example I gave is a farmer. He only plows the land and plants the seed, right? And maybe water the seed for some time. He just tills the land and plants the seed, but the rest of it, he is completely out of his control, right? For the seed to germinate, from the seed to tree comes out, can he make it happen? Or is it Krishna's arrangement? Then the rays of the sun, without the sun rays, can the seed germinate or grow? No. Without the rays of the moon, can the plant grow? No. Without the water from the rain, can it grow? So all these arrangements are made by Krishna. Right? But ultimately, when it is harvested, who claims the ownership of that crop? The farmer. Now consider, what did he do? He just plowed the land and planted the seeds. That's about all he did. And rest of it, Krishna did, but he gets the credit for that. Similarly, in our spiritual life also, we do a little bit. And the rest is done by Krishna. But Krishna gives us the credit. Not that we are eager to have credit, but Krishna gives it. Whether we want it or not, Krishna gives us the credit. That is how wonderful it is to become a devotee of Krishna. We do a little bit for Krishna and Krishna rewards us in such a wonderful way. And here we are seeing that Brahma, from Brahma's experience, Brahma had been inspired by the Lord to meditate. And then Brahma realized who he was and why he was there. That understanding dawned in Brahma's heart, why he was there. So that inspiration also is provided by Krishna. The inspiration to render service. In Gayatri Mantra, there is this particular expression, prachodayat. That is inspiration. Krishna inspires from within our hearts. Go ahead and do it. So Brahma was inspired. Brahma didn't know what he was meant to do. Krishna inspired him with such an inconceivable responsibility to fill up the universe. Can you imagine, for him to create the universe must have been such a huge task. But Krishna empowered him. Krishna assigned him and Krishna empowered him. And that is the wonderful thing about becoming a servant of a big personality. We may be poor, but if our master is rich, and when I work for the master, I may not be even able to think of $1,000,000. I may not even have $5 in my pocket. But my master may send me to the bank with $1,000,000 check. Say, go and collect the money and go into the market and buy all these things for me. Can a rich master do that? Or doesn't a rich master do that with his servant? So if an ordinary master can empower his servant in this way, if we become Krishna's servant, how Krishna can empower us? We won't be even able to imagine. Krishna empowers by saying things like, okay, go to the heavenly planet and take over the position of Indra. Or not just become an earth king and the earth. Krishna can make us the king of heaven. Krishna can make us even the controller of the universe. It's okay now. Good, I'm happy that you served as Indra so nicely. But you see, now, you see, I need someone to take the position of Brahma. So I thought that probably you can do it. Is that your response? Is it that you said that, no, no, I don't want to come? So this is how Krishna empowers his devotees. So that is why the best thing that we can do is to try to become a devotee of Krishna. Leave aside all our personal interests. What is there? What do I need? When I have a master like him, why should I worry about my maintenance, my upkeep? Let me just serve him and he will take care of me. And that is the mood of a devotee. Let me serve my glorious master, the most wonderful master that one can ever have. And that we have found. So let us take shelter of him. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hare. Any question?
Guru Maharaj, talking about austerity, in the scriptures and in Prabhupada's book, we find that per devotee is the only sincere patient's prasad. So, although there is this basic austerity of four regulative principles, still, like other types of sincere patient, like prasad and other things, are still there, and they see the senior devotees, they don't even go for those delicacies of very nice prasad and etc.
Telling me? Okay.
So, the question comes when it is also said sometimes encouraged that you can go for good prasad. How is it that we can go to that level of even abstaining from that
spiritual? Actually, our process is not that of renunciation. Our process is Krishna consciousness. We do not say no, but we say in relation to Krishna. And that is the real solution. No, you see, our nature is to want. Everybody wants something. And there is always something that we need. Like to keep our body and soul together, we need so many things. Right? Like it's getting cold. So we need warm clothes. So we are not saying, no, there is no need for warm clothes. No, we say, yes, there is a need for warm clothes. But we accept everything in relation to Krishna. In order to render service for Krishna, I need these things. In order to render service to Krishna, I need to maintain this body. So whatever is needed for maintaining this body properly, I will accept it. And that is the principle of anashaktasya vishayan jatharham upajunjata Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Mucchyate. Our way is Yukta Vairagya. Our way is not renunciation. Accept everything in relation to Krishna. And again, we go back to the same consideration of servant and master. If a servant has a rich master, does he have to be poor? No, because he is a servant of a rich master, he is rich. He lives in the same palace where the master lives. Or his master has a servant's quarter, which is more opulent than the 5-star hotel. Right? Like, consider, if a government servant can get so much facilities, a government service is a nice residence, nice car, nice facilities. So we can well imagine how Krishna's servants will be. A government servant goes to a poor country. So America sends the representative, the ambassador, to Zaire, you know, one of the very, very poverty-stricken countries. Right? But does he go there to become poor? Live like a poor man? No. The US government makes arrangement for him to live in a palace and, you know, makes all kinds of arrangements. So our point is, give up that is detrimental to Krishna consciousness and accept everything that is conducive to Krishna consciousness.
Would it be correct to say, you know, the proverb in English, God help those who help themselves, I would say that correct for our Krishna consciousness, God help those who help, who serve God and His devotees. Would it be correct to say?
Yeah, that's like God helps those who help themselves. That is an impersonal concept. That is, they don't have any understanding of a master servant. They don't see God as a master. They see God as an order supplier. You help yourself, God will help you. Okay, maybe that's true. But the better understanding is that you become a servant of God, then God will take care of you. Yes.
In our disciplic succession, we have personalities like Jagannath Das Babaji and Shiva Gaur Kishore, whose extreme austerities might influence some people to think or comparatively try to make an understanding of, I should do like this in order to advance. How can we find the middle ground in this?
Yeah. You see, all our activities and practices should be natural, not artificial. When one reaches that stage, then yes, it's natural. One would not want to be here. You know, he would like to go to a solitary place away from everything else. And they wouldn't, at that stage, you know, I mean, when you are even disgusted to see the face of anybody, right? To have, then only you can, in order to avoid the crowd, you can sit in a toilet, like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj used to do. He used to sit in a toilet so that people won't come there. You know, place stinking and, you know, dirty. Or, like, you see, there are two stages, two types of devotional practices. One is Bhajananandi, and the other is Goshtiyanandi. Bhajananandi is when one reaches the height of their relationship with Krishna, when the relationship with Krishna is so intense that you do not want any interruption. At that stage you become a Bhajananandi. But until we reach that stage, our business is to preach and spread Krishna consciousness. So when we are not really in that level, at that level, then better to remain where we are. So in Krishna consciousness, one important consideration is to find out where you are at. We have to know ourselves. And if we can't, that's why the spiritual master actually guides. He sees where one is and he engages him accordingly. Because ultimately, when we will become happy in doing whatever we are doing, When we enjoy doing something, then only we'll be happy doing that. Right? So, we have to know what we actually like to do. And the spiritual master or spiritual leader, he engages people accordingly. Oh, this is your propensity. So go ahead and do it for Krishna. So he uses the propensity in the service of Krishna. And that's how he spreads the movement. Therefore, we should be very careful not to artificially imitate those great personalities. And that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so adamant, heavy in about those Babajis. You see, the Babajis means those who dress in the way that Sanatan Goswami and the Goswamis of Vrindavan were dressing. This dress code actually started when Sanatana Goswami went to when Sanatana Goswami met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Varanasi. Sanatana Goswami was looking like a Muslim fakir. He had long hair, long beard, and he had kind of, obviously, he was not looking like a Vaishnava. Therefore, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Tapan Mishra that go, there is a Vaishnava outside and bring him in, Tapan Mishra came back, said, I couldn't find any Vaishnava there. So he said, was there anybody outside? He said, yes, there was a Muslim mendicant. He said, okay, bring him in. And when he brought Sanatana Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him. Now Sanatana Goswami felt very dirty, that the way he was dressed, and probably his clothes were not washed for many days, and naturally he was traveling. But Mahaprabhu insisted on embracing him. And Sanatana Goswami's response was, please don't touch me, I'm so dirty. Mahaprabhu said that you are so pure, that you can purify the entire universe by your devotion. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, now you go get civilized. So Sanatana Goswami then went to the Ganges. He shaved up and then Tapan Mishra brought him some clean clothes, new clothes. So Sanatana Goswami wanted an old cloth. He didn't even want it to wear. Didn't even want to wear those new clothes. And he took one dhoti, cut it into two, into half. And with one half, he wrapped it around his loin. And with the other half, he covered his torso. So that became the dress of the Goswamis in Vrindavan. Now, this is the ultimate stage of spiritual perfection. And that's, this is the stage of Paramahamsa. The color white is the color of the transcendental nature. And that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in order to smash those Babajis in Vrindavan, who are just imitating the Goswamis, but who are not qualified to to even present themselves in that dress code, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur accepted sannyas. And the purpose of his sannyas, accepting sannyas, was, you see, sannyas is the color of saffron is the color of sannyas, color of renunciation. And his thing was that being situated in Varnashram order, in the order of sannyas, I will carry the lotus feet of my spiritual master on my head. that is beyond this saffron is the white of the Paramahamsas. So these personalities, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, are the Paramahamsas, which is the ultimate perfection, ultimate spiritually perfected stage. But these guys, these people, they are just, you know, not completely engrossed in their mundane activities, but wearing the dress of the Goswamis, you know. So that's why Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so upset with them. So we should recognize that, you know, there's that, and that is the stage of Bhajana Navdi. Those who have transcended the material platform and become situated in the spiritual, perfected spiritual platform, where they are actually in constant communication with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like Raghunath Das Goswami, he used to take just a leaf cup of buttermilk. You know, buttermilk is the milk that is the yogurt. When the butter is taken out, dahi diluted, and butter is taken out, and what is left, just, you know, some sort of water maybe with a little white color practically. No substance in it. He used to just take that only once in 3 days. But one day Raghunath Das Goswami became unwell. So the doctor came to treat him, Ayurvedic doctor came to treat him, and he announced, he told others that he's suffering from indigestion. So they were surprised, how can he suffer from indigestion who takes only, you know, a cup full of
butter. This cup full of butter will go after 3 days. And so then Raghunath Das Goswami admitted that the night before he took part in a feast in Vrindavan, in that Vrindavan, and there he did overeat. So they are in another reality altogether. They are in the spiritual reality. Like bhajanānandena mattāliko Radha Krishna padāra bindau bhajanānandena mattāliko. That is the situation. They are constantly engaged in serving the Lord. So our business is not to imitate. Our business is to act.
I think Srinivasan Bhakti Vinod Thakur exemplified very nicely in that after fulfilling his Goswami responsibilities, he became the Bhaji, became Babaji in that Paramahamsa stage. But he had fulfilled that mission and he entered that very, very sweetly.
Right. Yeah, Prabhupada used to say, samadhi, service now, samadhi later.
Yeah.
Serve now. When the body becomes old, then yes, you can. Now when the body is full of passion, why artificially try to imitate those exalted personalities?
Srila Gaura Kishore spoke out so strongly against the fake Babajis of Vrindavan. When he was asked about them being Vajranandis, he said none of them are Vajranandis. Not one of them are actually in that stage.
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented, alas, I went to Vrindavan and couldn't find a single Vaishnava. Yes.
Although Sri Prabhupada and Sri Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they are sort of situated at the topmost level of Krishna consciousness. That is, they are Paramahamsas. But for the fallen people of Kali, like us, they have descended to the Kali Vrajak stage and became Paramahamsa Kali Vrajak. Is it right?
Yes. In order to preach from Uttamalika platform, Bhajananda platform, they come down to to Mathematica.
What is the definition of dhira?
Dhira. Dhira is sarvam api mam prithivim srishti. Vacha vega manaso rodha vega jivha vegam udar tatastra vegam etan veganja sheshaheta. So one who is able to control the urge of his urge to speak, vacha vegam, manovegam, the urge of the mind, krodha vegam, the urge of anger, jivha vegam, the urge of the tongue, udara vegam, urge of the belly, and upastha vegam, urge of the genitals. So one who is able to control this is a dhira. Okay? So you want to become a dhira? Or you want to become an adhira? Dhira, 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 dhira. Very good. Yes, everybody should try. Okay, thank you all very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.